What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning, beautiful people. How is it going? I hope you've had the most wonderful week full of exercise. 30 plants a week, please. Self-care, and of course, I hope you've had some time to enjoy the beautiful sunshine. So, welcome back to What the Health with me, Gabby Allen. And we're here to talk about the weird and wonderful world of health and fitness and support you through your fitness journey, of course. Each week, I'll be joined by a range of guests to dissect the latest fitness trends, separate facts from fiction, and give you advice on how to achieve your health goals too. We've had some great educational discussions here and some eye-opening chats with some of the biggest names in the fitness industry. And don't worry, you can find all previous shows on all good podcast platforms. Just search at What The Health Show. And when you see my face, you'll know you're in the right place. So let's kick off another great show then, shall we? Coming up on today's show, we are going to be joined by Becky Briggs, professional runner, and Lauren White, my friend, life coach, and motivational speaker. But first up, on this week of Mythbusters, we are going to be joined by Becky Briggs. No, that's not true. We're going to be joined by Bobby Butters, lecturer in sport and exercise science. Can you hear me, my friend?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Looking wonderful on this Tuesday morning. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for the invite. It's an absolute honour. So thank you so much for asking.
Oh, how lovely are you? Okay, so I need to know all of your information. I've been looking at your stuff online and I know that you know way more about this than I do. So on this week, guys, we're going to be talking about cycle tracking. I feel like this subject has been like blown up over the past couple of years. Maybe it's just because I'm more in tune with my cycle now that I have one, because I've got polycystic ovaries and stuff. But yeah, I want to know everything that you know. So why should women track their periods?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. First of all, thank you very much for asking this question. It's my PhD topic, so I'm by no means an expert in the area. I've been doing my PhD now for 22 months and it's a big area of interest. So I started sort of thinking about this a few years before my PhD, and it started when I had athletes coming to me basically saying that they started to feel a certain way around their periods, and so it made me think, like, well, let's actually try and see if tracking allows us to see any patterns. So even just as simple as knowing the first day of your period is the first day of your menstrual cycle, and then the day before you come on your period is the last day of your menstrual cycle. So just having like that information can be really helpful, and tracking it over 3 to 6 months, even if you don't want to do it all the time, just to see if you do have something that's regular, irregular, are there different patterns that happen all the time? And then if something happens that's out of the ordinary, then is it something that then continues to be out of the ordinary, or is it something that was just a one-off?
Okay.
So just having some information like that can be really valuable to then know, do I need to go and seek further advice?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's funny that you say that, because, I mean, my cycle every month, I always tend to go a bit crazy just about 2 weeks before I get a period. But sometimes I don't, or sometimes I do. Like, it's become more often than not these days. But it is, like, I've started tracking as well, because as I said earlier, I have only recently had a cycle. I used to go for like months and months and months without anything, and that was because I was coming off the pill and I was trying to, like, you know, we were trying to figure out what's going on. So it was actually my mum that said to me, you know, yeah, Gabby, every time this time of the month, you go a bit crazy. And I'm like, oh my God, this must be what it's like to have like actual hormones. It's mad.
Yeah, actually experiencing those different like hormonal fluctuations, like, yeah, it can do interesting things to our mental state physically. And sometimes I think it's a bit nice to be like, oh, actually, this could be the reason why,
yeah,
because I'm actually during my period. Like, I was actually doing a talk about this the other day, and I said, at the moment, I'm literally during my period any minute now, and if I see a newborn child, I start crying. And that's just where I am in my life right now. And it's like, that makes sense, actually, because that becomes a bit more enhanced when I am getting closer to my to my period. So,
how,
yeah,
interesting is that? You just mentioned about how it affects us physically as well then, because obviously we know that I mean, there's a common fact that women tend to have ups and downs with their mental health, let's put it that way. But when it comes to your physical ability, can you talk us through the different stages of the cycle and how they do affect you physically?
Absolutely. I think an overall caveat to begin with is a lot of it's unknown, if you will. We can talk about people's individual experiences, which is extremely valid and is a big part of the research. But ultimately, from a physical side, I'm hoping to delve into this that little bit more to know if your muscular strength is actually affected by the different hormonal fluctuations. So essentially, what happens throughout the menstrual cycle, which is typically around 21 to 35 days in and around that time, when you basically start your period, so first day that you experience a bleed, what happens is your hormones actually shoot down, they drop, and then you're then in what's known as your follicular phase. Mm-hmm. Some women think that this is harder because you can get PMS symptoms or bloating or things that can be associated with a period, so cramps, lower back pain, that type of thing. And so it's been acknowledged that women can struggle in that time frame. However, someone like myself, I'm at the moment, I know that maybe the first 2 or 3 days might be a bit uncomfortable, and then I start to feel like better in the gym. And then basically what happens from there, say your period lasts around 7 days on average, it can be more, can be less, and then your estrogen starts to rise. And there has been discussions that rise in estrogen is favourable for strength training. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of sort of theory and speculation based on research that hasn't been used with the gold standard of tracking menstrual cycle phases. So there's not been that many times when bloods has been used in research to determine whether that estrogen level is higher.
So are they just using the kind of just going off what people feel like rather than actual scientific evidence?
Yeah, so one thing I've come across in the research so far, and then people discussing this research, though it is absolutely valid to go with those experiences and what people are going through, we do need more research looking into the blood side of things. So it is a lot more like calendar-based tracking.
Yeah.
So that's when you simply, you know, just know the first day of your period. And then there has been stuff looking at temperature as well. Again, some of the temperature data hasn't been validated from my understanding with the bloods tracking data as well. Another thing that can enhance the process is actually using ovulation tests. So you start ovulating approximately, again, this is different for every female. This can start basically 7 to 14 days after your last day of your period. And then that's when estrogen really spikes and something called luteinizing hormone and follicular stimulating hormone really spikes to stimulate your body to release an egg. So again, a massive spike in estrogen. Some people love this phase. Some people aren't as much of a fan because there's a sudden fluctuation in hormones that can sometimes disturb your bowels and things like that. So people can experience bloating during that time as well.
Mm. We're just always bloated, guys. We just have to...
I know.
Women are just always bloated.
I know. I was talking to one of my colleagues, actually. Like women's bodies can change day to day. So we become very sensitive to the way that we sort of sometimes feel. Like obviously I'm saying this as a blanket statement here. Because of these constant changing hormones, you know, one day to the next, it can be slightly different.
It's so true. And I think in the lead up to my period, all the men listening now are just like, oh my God, all we hear these days is about periods. In the lead up to my period, I find that like I really hold water. So mm-hmm. I can be... you know, literally the day before I can have like, you know, my abs or whatever. And then if that's when I know my period's coming, because all of a sudden I'm just like, feel just a little bit like, yeah, watery. You know what I mean? All around my torso area, and my face goes a little bit puffier.
Yeah. Yeah. I call it like fluffy.
Yeah, fluffy. But then as soon as I get my period, I'm almost like, yes, because I feel like it's like, we've come to the end of the fluffy, like, part. And I also feel like in the lead up to my period as well, I do feel like I lack as much energy. But then as soon as it comes, maybe it's like placebo effect, I don't know. But as soon as it comes, I'm like, right, okay, day one again, let's start, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting what you're saying there about the placebo effect as well. So, like, there has been some discussions of, is there sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy where you know that you're on your period, you're aware of what can happen during, I think it's a really important phase, it's called the premenstrual phase.
Yeah.
So that 7-day period before you actually start your period, and that's when a lot of symptoms can happen. But then it's like, those symptoms are happening, but does it actually impact your performance, or are you saying that it's going to impact
yeah.
your performance?
Because you're like, you're looking for a reason for it. It's like, I had a shit day in the gym today, it's because I'm getting my period, when actually you're just being lazy.
Yeah, like, it could be so many different things, couldn't it? It could be that actually, do you know what, I'm just really not feeling it.
Or you didn't eat enough, So talk Absolutely. To me then, how do you approach like the nutrition side of things then? You know, I know that obviously we can listen to our bodies and like tackle the gym, and like, as we've just been saying, either you've got loads of energy or you haven't. But is there ways that you should like change your nutrition to support your period, like to support your cycle? Or, you know, what would you like put into place at different parts of the cycle?
That's a really good question. And ultimately one I wish I could give a straight answer to. like most of this information. I think the first thing is just making sure you're eating enough in general. I know that there has been some advices to eat sort of more carbs in one phase and more fat in another. I don't know how much research has been there to justify that. There could be things that work really well for yourselves, like individually. So if you find that, you know what, I'm actually feeling a little bit more hungrier in that final phase of my menstrual cycle, where just from a period where we start, you know, a typical one is we start craving chocolate, as an example, that's talked about quite a lot. I am included in one
and
of
me.
Those. So, you know, so it's like, do you know what, actually, maybe I do need to eat that a little bit more because I'm feeling that bit more hungry. So therefore, you know, even if it's like 150 calories and it's a few more carbs, and if you feel like that's what you need, then go for what you need. That would be my sort of initial advice to people sort of in general. I know that sometimes when you're an athlete, say for example, who needs to be in a weight class sport like myself, I have to be mindful of those 150 calories, because it might be that actually I'm like a week out from competition and actually there's 150 calories I need to keep back on that day. But that doesn't mean I don't eat the chocolate, it just means that like
you maybe just don't eat the whole I think like for absolutely. What I say to my clients about that is that like it's once again placebo. It's like, okay, yeah, you might be a little bit hungrier, fine, I get it. You can maybe, you know, have a little bit of a bigger portion, but also don't just because you're on your period be like, oh, I'm gonna eat way more food because, you know, I'm on my period. Because then once you come off your period, you're like, oh, you know what, it's annoying because I'm actually over on my calories this week. And obviously this is not for everyone, like it's not about tracking calories for everyone, and obviously eat if you need to eat, 100%. But for me, I think it's like, you know, actually listen to your body and think about what is actually right, or whether you're just being like, I'm on period, so I'm just going to eat this whole dairy milk bar. Okay, can I ask you like, then lastly then, what is your advice then for people starting to track their periods? Anyone that's listening to this today and they're like, right, okay, maybe I do need to take a bit more note about what happens during my cycle. How would you tell people to start?
Okay, I really hope that in 5 years time when I finish my PhD, this can be a more informative answer with my own research, because that's what I'm hoping to be able to do. Ultimately, first things first is track the first day of your cycle, at the very least, track how long your cycle actually, sort of not cycle, your period lasts for, and that can give you an idea of how long that first phase is for you. And then from there, if you do, like, for example, have a diary or something, if you're someone who trains, or even if you're someone who isn't, you could make notes if you find that certain times of the month, like you've mentioned yourself, where certain times of the month, you know, you just feel different, make a note of it. And does that happen all the time? Is there a physical symptom that comes around? You know, you've got breast tenderness, or you've got low back pain at certain parts of the cycle. Is that a regular occurrence? If so, is it something that you need to seek out for a GP, or is it something that you can start to implement something to help manage that pain, all that kind of discomfort, you know? So
love that. Thank you so much. I feel like I've learned so much in this short amount of time. But anyone that doesn't know Bobs, get onto her Instagram. She talks about all this stuff as well. It's such a pleasure to meet you, my love. Have a great day. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Amazing. Lots of talk about periods there today. Love that. Okay, quickly, just before we go to our break, I want to talk to you about what I'm incorporating into my weeks, right? Talk to you before about my grip strength. Guys, my grip strength is so bad. I'm trying to lift heavier, but it's my wrists that give up before my bloody legs do. So I've incorporated dead hangs. What a name, by the way. What a terrible name for an exercise. But it basically is because you look like a dead man hanging. So, and everyone can do it as well. So go into the gym or wherever. If you can find a pole to hold on to, you literally grab it above your shoulders and then lower your body weight down. If you have to jump up, obviously you would have to lower it anyway. But basically you're hanging down and you're just holding onto the bar for as long as you can. You can literally do this as a beginner all the way up to through to advanced. And it's a great way to blast your grip. And it's also a lovely way. I'm loving it because it decompresses the spine. So when you have been doing those big heavy compound movements like your squats and deadlifts and all that, it offers some respite for the vertebrae and potentially reduces the risk of any back related issues. They stretch your lat muscles and it's just a great way to like reposture yourself. What's the word? Like, you know, realign yourself. There you go. That's the word. So everybody this week, go and hang on to some poles and get your dead hangs in. I'll see you after the break.
Keeping fitness fun. What the health with Gabby Allen.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me in the studio was AJ and Curtis Pritchard.
When I used to go on Strictly, I used to think of it as like a public service. I'm entertaining somebody for 90
seconds.
And we
salute you.
And
thank
just like,
you, AJ.
I want people to forget about their problems. I know it's a really weird mentality.
No, it's a... You are right in a way, right? Because there
but
are
people
that
you never made the final.
There was no need for that. Well,
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I'm joined by fellow Love Island contestant, Adam Maxted, and professional wrestler, may I add. If you could wrestle any celebrity, who would it be?
I'm trying to think who would be...
Someone needs to like, be like your height, your size. Come on, you've got to be fair about it. It can't be like a little weasel.
Maybe like... Anthony Joshua or something.
Jesus. Really? You reckon you could take Anthony Joshua?
In a boxing fight, probably not.
But in a wrestling match. Yeah.
In a wrestling match, I back myself.
Okay, fair.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
TikTok sensations Jack and Sorrel. Iconically, there have been some amazing celeb couples. Who would be your favourite of all times?
David Beckham and Victoria.
Goals.
I just think, like, the twists and turns of it all, but still being together like that to me is peak celeb.
For me, do you know what? I just love a good power couple. We had Beyonce, Jay-Z. Like,
yes.
I want them to reign highly. I want them to be girl bossing, man bossing, just bossing throughout, and us obsessed with them separately and together.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Well, we are back in business. This week, I'm joined by Becky Briggs, professional runner. Thank you for coming in today, babes. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. All the better for seeing you. Okay, so before we get into it, the nitty gritty, I want to know a bit more about you so the listeners can also know a bit more. So we're going to do some quick fire questions. Okay?
Amazing.
So first off, my favourite one, three words to describe yourself.
Ooh, passionate, committed, and... bubbly.
Love that. I got that from you as soon as you walked in. The bubbly one. I don't know about the passion yet, but I assume you are because you are a professional runner. So, 5K or marathon?
Marathon. Always.
Oh, Jesus, okay. workout in the morning or evening?
In the morning.
Yeah, same. What is your go-to cheat meal?
I love a good pizza.
Same. I could eat pizza every day.
Yeah.
Dream workout partner?
Oh, gosh. Would love to go on a run with Paula Radcliffe.
I spoke to her recently. What is your workout anthem?
Oh, Free by Florence and the Machine.
Cute. So actually on that, I can't run without listening to music, but my brother does marathons and stuff and he doesn't listen to music. And I'm like, how do you do that? That is mental resilience. My brain is way too chaotic for that. So talk to me. We know more about you now. We know that you're passionate and you love marathons because you're crazy. Did you always want to be a professional athlete?
I've ran since I was 9 years old, so it's been a big part of my life for a really long time. But it wasn't until I was kind of like 19 years old that I thought that running would be any more than a hobby. So it's not always been kind of like a long-term dream, but definitely in the past kind of 5 years, it's been like a big ambition, yeah.
So what did you want to do before?
I had no idea, doing like all sorts. When I was a child, I was like a theatre kid, like, you know, really.
Jazz hands, like, same.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that was always a big dream. But yeah, you know, I didn't kind of think that I was going to go down this route.
So what was the turning point then?
So it was actually, I'd actually started a degree doing geography and business, and then I got my first ever international vest for running. And I went away on this trip and I was 3 weeks into my degree and everyone around me was, you know, kind of like doing degrees to do with sports. And all of a sudden I just kind of thought, Becky, why aren't you doing something you enjoy? And yeah, that was the turning point. And I just thought, do what you enjoy.
So what was this international vest then?
That was my first ever England vest, and that was for a 10K in France.
Oh my God, yeah. That's so cool. So had you been doing like just running for fun before that?
Yeah, yeah. And then that was my first ever call up. So yeah, that was back in 2018. So yeah.
Oh my God, that is amazing. And so what happened to the geography degree? I'm invested.
Left. dropped. You know, the race was on the Sunday. I was back home by the Tuesday, all my stuff back home. That I'm a very kind of like, once I've made a decision on something, like that's, you know, that's the...
That's something I'm working on at the moment. I'm so indecisive. So I appreciate that from you. And I also think going on from that is that, look at you now, like that was 2018 and now you're like living your best life, running as a as your profession. And I think, you know, a lot of people do things that, I mean, I'm sure the geography degree was someone's dream, yeah, but it's amazing that you took yourself out of it and now you're like, that was the best decision you've ever made. 100%. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So how has running affected like the rest of your life then? You know, has it affected you as your in your personality or, you know, your body image? How's it affected you?
100%. I think definitely in terms of personality, because I've been doing it for such a long time, I do feel like I've always been known like as the runner, you know, like at, you know, people kind of see me and they're like, oh, that's that blonde girl who runs all the time. And it's like, yeah, that is me. So it definitely is a big part of my personality, which is such both a blessing and a curse, because sometimes it feels like it is, you know, all of me. And you know, it kind of is, like I'm so passionate about it, but then there isn't any escape. But equally, I love it to pieces, so I wouldn't kind of change it for the world.
On your gravestone, it's going to say Becky Briggs, the runner. And on mine, it's going to say Gabby Allen from Love Island. So I think mine's worse. I would rather be known as Gabby Allen, the professional runner. Okay, and then with your body image and like how you like look at yourself, I'm sure there's been such a journey. Like that's a long time to be running and stuff. Yeah. Like my, not my body image, but my body has changed since I've incorporated more running into mm-hmm. my life. So how has that affected you in that respect?
Yeah, 100%. It's when I was younger, it was never really something that crossed my mind, in all honesty. I just kind of, you know, like ran and this is what I look like. But definitely the older you get, and also having a presence on social media, you know, people's comments and things, you know, it can be hard. It can be quite negative. The amount of times I've had people say to me, well, you don't look like a marathon runner. And I'm like,
what does that mean?
Exactly. I'm like, what does that mean? Because like, I am a marathon runner. You know, like I've represented my country for the marathon. So I am a marathon runner. But it is a tough one because everyone has their own opinions. Mm. And I just think that sometimes people do better if they just, you know, had them in their head. Don't need to say it out loud.
There's an advert on the TV at the moment. I don't know if you see it. Is it... It's like, well, someone's taking a picture of someone and then they write in the comments something like, oh, you know, something rude. And then the phone comes down and it's like, it shows that basically that if you've got nothing nice to say, don't, that you would, like, to someone's face. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't say something like about, you're not a marathon runner to your face when you've just won a freaking marathon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But online, people are just so vocal, the arseholes. Anyone listening that does that, stop doing it. So you've been open about suffering from an eating disorder.
Yeah.
Was that because of that or the online stuff?
No, interestingly, I feel like this is, you know, kind of like a little bit of a different journey to most people. My eating disorder was stemmed from my very early days in the sport.
Okay.
It was when I was like 12 and kind of lasted like between the age of like 12 and 17. And actually it wasn't fueled by social media or comparison with anyone else. It was very kind of like intrinsic. It was all kind of me wanting to feel good enough in myself rather than kind of like external factors, which I feel like is quite interesting, you know, a little bit, you know, kind of different from, you know, a lot of people's journeys. But yeah, you know, and that kind of took a lot of work on myself to be able to get into a place where I, you know, felt good again.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you did it.
Yeah.
I think like maybe it's to do with like teenage years and stuff too. But it's great that it wasn't like a external influence to some ways. I'm like, is it great? But at least, you know, because you're not escaping from that then. Do you know, it was like something inside of you that you overcome.
Yes.
So that's amazing. So you are a running coach. I need some tips because my knees don't hurt anymore. So my brother, as I said, does running and he came on one of my first fitness retreats. Well, he came on the first fitness retreat and he gave us all a running technique workshop and he looked at my running technique and he was like, okay, first of all, you look like a duck. And I was like sticking my chin out, sticking my bum out and I was running through my heels.
Yeah.
So, and just a few little tweaks and now I can actually run a 10K and it doesn't hurt anymore. I mean, it hurts my soul, but just those little tweaks, like, so how what's your like approach to being a running coach?
For sure. So I think, you know, when it comes to being a running coach, I do it all very kind of like one-to-one. It's all online. But I think building that personal relationship with somebody that you coach is really important because, you know, running's fab, but there are so many factors that influence it, whether it's work, stress, you know, things like the weather, hormones, so many different things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to kind of, you know, create that connection with someone and for them to know that you're a person and for you to know that they're a person, kind of beyond their running and the stats, because there's so many stats out there now. And stats are great, whether it's your Whoop, your Coros, your, you know, all these things, Fitbit. But actually, you know, kind of that, how do you feel is so important to ask those questions and then give that person the time to kind of think about it and, you know, create that response.
So do people come to you as beginners or do they come to you because, like, for me, for example, I am doing my 5Ks and 10Ks, but I don't really have, like, a running schedule.
Yes.
And, you know, apparently if you need to improve, you need to do intervals and track and endurance or, like, you know, do 5K but slow it down or do 5K and speed up. There's so many different things that you need to do.
Yeah.
So do people come to you with a bit of knowledge or do they come to you like me going, okay, can you just tell me what to do, please?
To be fair, there is a complete range. You know, I've coached athletes from, you know, very, very beginner, whether they're, you know, working towards a 10K or working towards their first marathon. They might be run walking it right all the way until, you know, I coach, you know, I've coached a girl to an international vest, which is
unreal.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, a whole range, but there is definitely, you know, no matter what level of runner you are, having that kind of, you know, structure and accountability is the way, not just to improve, but also to protect yourself from injury and burnout. You know, you don't need to be doing everything as hard as you can all the time because you'll just get worn out. So, yeah.
So I've Googled a few times, can you do a 5K every day? Because, like, for me, I like running is really new to my schedule. I'm strength girl.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot of HIIT stuff and now I'm predominantly strength. And I think that's because, A, it's, you know, for overall body composition, like, you know, and it makes me feel fucking powerful.
Yeah.
I love that. But running has been a great thing for my mental health.
Yes.
Only since the beginning of the year, really, have I started to run. Obviously, you know, my knees. But it's been amazing, and that's what I use it for. I use it as a tool to, like, sort my head out.
100%.
And do you do that as well?
Yes.
Still?
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. You know, ultimately, like, this is still my hobby.
Mm.
You know, like, yeah, it's a huge hobby, but it's my hobby. Just like, for instance, you know, I'm not, you know, someone who's a huge fan of going to the gym. So that's maybe, like, a part of my training that, like, I just get done. But actually going for a run, going for an easy run, you know, a run with friends is, yeah, it's great for the headspace and just kind of gives you that time away, time to yourself as well.
Do you go to the gym, literally, as you said, just because you have to, kind of thing?
Pretty much, yeah. It's
love
definitely
it.
Not something that I enjoy, but I think the big part of that is, you know, because then it makes the running feel harder than, you know, when you're tired, so.
Yeah, it's true. That's why, like, I want to go for more runs, but I also want to train my bum three times a week. I'm like, I want to grow my glutes, but, and I have to do it though, because since I've been running, I've noticed things are like depleting and it's like not what I want. But I want to do both.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is hard. It's that balance.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not, I still haven't found the balance. But you just mentioned about going running with your mates then.
Yeah.
That's something that I also, we've, me and my brother just started a run club.
Yeah.
The next one's on the 10th of August. Anyone wants to come? And it's so fun to run with other people.
Yeah.
Because you almost like, we did, the first one that I did with them, we did 5K and I looked at my watch and I was like, oh my God, that went so quickly. Obviously, it weren't a sprint. We did it as a nice, easy pace. There was different levels across the board. But it was just so nice to like run with other people because I don't do that with my friends. They all would like literally look at me like I was crazy. So what, like, what do you do with your friends? Do you go for run clubs or do you like do you lead the runs? How does it work?
Yeah, for sure. So the uni that I went to was kind of like primarily I went there for running. So kind of created a big group of friends that were runners there. You know, like now my housemate, my best friend, you know, is also a runner. So we do a lot of our runs together, which
amazing.
Is so nice. But then, yeah, you know, going to run clubs, leading run clubs, you know, just, you know, messing with other people, you know, kind of like through social media. Do you want to go on a run? And it is so nice.
It's really, like the new dating way, isn't it?
Yeah,
the new Hinge.
Being able to have a catch up, and you know, like everyone's always so busy, but having a catch up while you're running is, you know, it's really nice, and everyone kind of like makes the time to do it. Whereas if you were like, do you want to just go for a coffee? It'd be like, oh, I've not got time.
But if you say run and a coffee, people are like, I'm there.
Yeah.
The popularity of running is like spiked, and I think you know what, people have bad words to say about social media, but I honestly do think that it's had such a powerful impact on getting more people running, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, from me running since I was, you know, kind of like very, very young, it was really uncool. Like it was the, you know, the most uncool thing to be doing at school was like cross country. And now, you know, you go around Battersea Park and everyone's, you know, looking gorgeous. Everyone's training really hard. And it's just amazing. It's so beautiful to see like so many people, you know, being like passionate about the sport.
It's so true. Yeah, it's funny you say that. My friend, she used to run 10Ks just for a laugh. Like she's like double the size of me, got these big long legs, and you know, she runs, but she doesn't run anymore. She now lives in the Caribbean. Anyway, when I go for my run, she goes, you used to take the piss out of me because I was going for my runs, and now you're the one that's doing them. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, I take it back.
But no, it's nice. It's really nice to see so many people running, and yeah, it just brings me so much joy.
So what are your top tips then for running a marathon?
Oh, okay. For running a marathon, I would say is to plan it well in advance. You know, if you're doing a marathon, don't kind of like 8 weeks out think, okay, I'm going to run this marathon. You need to be thinking of it at least 6 months in advance. You know, you've got to build yourself up to it and train sustainably. You know, don't do too much too soon and, you know, kind of like have that structure, whether it's with a coach or whether it's with a coaching app, or you know, there's so much online that you can follow, but you know, have that structure so that it's planned out, so you have enough time to prepare and taper. I think that's so important. And then a big part of it would be the fueling side of things. You know, you can't train for a marathon and get through a marathon successfully if you're not taking fuel with you on the marathon, whether that's gels or, you know, energy drinks, that type of thing. Different things work for different people, but it's so important, and, you know, don't neglect it. We don't want anyone keeling over at 30K type of thing.
I think that's top tip that I took from that is, well, I don't know anything about the gels, and I'm sure I could get advice from my friends, but I really do think that if I wanted to do a marathon, I would be in contact with you, like, can you help me do it? Because there's, as you said, there's so many moving parts to it.
Yeah,
like the gels and stuff, like when do you even do them during the run? Because I can do a 10k obviously, but then when, like, how far do you need to get in before you know that you need a gel?
For sure. Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah, it is really interesting, and there's so much kind of like you say, so many moving parts on it, but yeah, it's really important, and you know, can be the make it or break it, I definitely think, with a marathon.
And the fueling afterwards as well, I always find that I'm absolutely starving for the rest of the day when I go for a run.
Yeah.
Even though I strength train, but I feel like running really like takes it out of me.
Yeah, 100%. It is really, really interesting. And I think as well, you know, if you're kind of like new to running or increasing your running, it's to kind of, you know, honour that and make sure that you're getting, you know, the right combination of like protein and carbs afterwards. And that way, you know, you're going to recover better and you're going to just feel better as well.
So then, what are your goals? Rather than like helping everybody else, what is your goal, your biggest goal as a runner?
So I think, you know, you never know what's going to happen, but I would be lying if I, you know, said, you know, the Olympics is it's a massive dream. I would absolutely love to go to the Olympics, you know, whether it's 2028 or whether it's 2032 or even 2036, because female marathon runners peak later on.
It's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, because I feel like as women, we always we feel young to do everything.
Yes.
So that's good. We get better, fine wine.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, to get the Olympic rings tattooed on me would be the ultimate dream. But if that doesn't happen, then it's just to see how far I can go. And I think there's so much, excitement in not knowing where that is, type of thing.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, helping other people along the way. If I can, change one person's life and inspire them, then that's fantastic.
I think you're going to do it. I feel like you've had such a long stint, basically, as a runner, that I feel like the only way is up. Do you know what I mean? You've basically endured this whole life of it. That why not? You can absolutely do that.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Going to stick at it, keep enjoying it, keep passionate, and yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I think you're amazing. And I will be reaching out if I need some help.
Amazing.
Because I think you'd be able to do wonders for me. Becky Briggs, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks. Oh, I just turned my mic off. Sorry. Coming up after this, I'll be joined by Lauren White, life coach and motivational speaker. I'll speak to you then.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
FUBAR Radio presents
The Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me now, I have Claire Seal, who is a content creator and author.
I think there's loads of shame when it comes to money and financial difficulty, but I honestly think that shame is really a symptom of the judgment that exists in society. I don't think that people are feeling ashamed for the sake of it. I think they're feeling ashamed because you can't really sort of open your phone or open a newspaper without seeing these huge judgments piled on people who've made mistakes with money. And I think it's acceptable for people to slag you off about being bad with money in a way that it might not be for other mistakes that you might make.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
Let's bring in Tobias Elwood, former Defence Minister.
Rishi Sunak has done well to pivot us back, taking us into far calmer political waters.
Has he taken you back into calmer political waters? I mean, you're on track, according to some of the polls, to the largest wipeout in years and, may never return from it. I mean, how has he taken you back into calmer political waters?
We've just seen inflation go down to 2%. Confidence in business is returning.
But is that down to Rishi Sunak?
You've got to let me finish the question. You keep asking me a question and then throwing another question in.
I'm just curious to know, is inflation down to Rishi Sunak?
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I have this stunning Steph Williams with me now, founder of the We Glow app. I did turf games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrible. But it was so fun. But it was savage, right? Yeah. But I wasn't the best in the room and I hate that. And I was oh, God, I haven't trained well
You're
enough for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't normally think I am. But then when I was there, I was this is so annoying because... Yeah. And then I was why do I actually need to be good at this, though? Yeah. Can I not just do it for fun?
But also, it's when I've done casts and stuff before and the blokes were lift that heavier weight and I'm no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to lift the heavier weight. I know what I'm capable of. I know what works for my body.
Yeah.
And I think it's just I know what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you're working out to feel good, you're going to look good.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Are we back? Yes, we are. Hello, Lauren, my friend. I've known Lauren for a lifetime, I was going to say, because she's a life coach, for a long time. She's amazing and she's got a great story to tell us. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, babes.
Anytime, honestly.
So, Lauren White, life coach and motivational speaker. How did you first get into life coaching?
So I've been doing life coaching, motivational speaking. Well, I've been doing motivational speaking since I was 18 years old. Battered addiction at a young age, got sober at 18, went into rehab, changed my life around, bish, bash, bosh. Went into schools with the Amy Winehouse Foundation, very, very young. That's when my motivational speaking started. Always had this passion around it, but then moved to Hong Kong, got offered a job. And then when I came back from Hong Kong, in the last couple of years, decided to go into mainly working with NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and coaching other people to help them kind of understand the way they are, look at their habits, look at their behaviors, and also look at areas in their life that they can really change. I'm all about purpose. I'm all about driving for change and all about kind of, taking that individual and seeing them on that journey. So been a couple of years.
That's amazing. I mean, wow. Literally, you've just given me so much information. I'm looking at you what the hell? Okay, so 18. That is so young.
Yeah.
amazing that you like came out of it though. And then like you've, so how old are you now? Sorry, never asked a woman her age.
I know, it's fine. I'm 31.
Okay, yeah. So she's lived a lifetime sober, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So the
NLP.
NLP. So is that people struggling with addiction?
No, so neuro-linguistic programming is pretty much around like programming the brain, the way that we wire, the way that we think about things.
So why you do things?
Yes.
Okay.
So usually when I do NLP with clients and coaching with clients, I take them understanding their thought processes.
Okay.
And the way that their thinking is. And
so like the patterns, what leads to certain behavior.
Yeah, but also their self-limiting beliefs, right?
Mm.
Their thoughts. And it's all due to learned behavior within their mindset and what they've been through in their life, repeated patterns of behavior.
So is it kind of therapy then?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So what kind of clientele do you tend to attract?
It's really random. So originally it was obviously people that were struggling with drugs and alcohol, because obviously I've got my experience, that understanding around that. But as time has gone on, it's people that, you know, have elements of low self-esteem and self-worth, people that struggle with boundaries, people pleasing, people that you know, don't really know where to go next in their life, people that want a little bit more accountability. But it all stems, my biggest passion is self-sabotage. People that are self-sabotaging, but it doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. It can be anything.
Mm.
And what my biggest common denominator with self-sabotage is procrastination, which is very common nowadays. Being on your phone too much, vaping is a huge one.
Vaping
is a self-sabotaging behavior.
What do you mean?
Vaping,
so like, yeah, I know what vaping is, but I mean, it's in like, so people
like literally vape like crazy, like it's an addiction.
Yeah,
it's become really bad.
Yeah, it is actually mental. Like the amount of people that vape in bed.
Yeah, or in the toilet. No, I see it all the time. It's crazy.
You just see out the top of a cubicle, like smoke coming out the top.
Literally.
What the hell? Yeah. Are you living in Bali right now?
I currently live in Bali.
How unreal. But vapes allowed over there?
I think so.
I think the only reason I asked that is because when I went to Mexico, it was like, it wasn't as big as it was when it was in the UK, people vaping. Whereas now, if you go down the streets in London, every bin is covered in like the stickers from the back of vapes.
Yeah.
Mental. Okay, so let's go back to you then. What was the catalyst, if you don't mind me asking, of the soberness at 18?
Yeah, so I started drinking very young. I came from an amazing family. I grew up in Hertfordshire, two brothers and sister, had everything I wanted on the outside, but there was always some struggles on the inside. I witnessed my mum have breast cancer when I was 12. I witnessed a few issues of alcoholism or abuse in that area with family members who now are sober. So they're like kind of like my, you know, inspiration.
Yeah.
But I myself, from a very, very young age, had incredible low self-esteem. I had a lot of expectation around myself. I had a lot of fear. And it was, unfortunately, you know, an easy way to pick up drink at that age.
Mm. Was so that so that it gave you confidence?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. But it took away all the fear that I had towards myself and my low self-esteem. Mm. And, you know, the minute I picked up alcohol and drugs, it took away the ability to even think.
Mm.
So obviously when I started drinking, I didn't realise that it was going to be this progressive illness, which is something that I've talked around within addiction, is that it is a progressive illness. If you are someone that has a very addictive personality, is prone to addiction, is been born with trauma and low self-esteem, you're more likely going to turn to substances to change where you feel. Mm. They do believe it's a chronic brain disease. And for me, I always knew that there was addiction in my family. I just ignored it, though, right? Because I always thought I was in control until I was out of control. Mm. And it manifested from 12 years old to 18 with, you know, drinking, smoking, doing drugs, turning to eating disorders, bulimia, and then full-blown, by 18, hating myself and not wanting to look at myself in the mirror. You know, this little girl at 12 didn't expect that she was going to be like this at 18.
My gosh.
And that's how it ended up.
And then what was the turning moment where you were like, enough is enough?
So,
because 18 is very young. Like, that could have been, that was when you're legally allowed to do all of those 100%. Things, for God's sake.
100%.
So it's such a credit to yourself that you put the frigging nail in the coffin then. You're like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm going to sort my life out.
Exactly. Do you know what? I generally feel like it was a blessing from God because, like I said, I had two family members that were struggling with addiction. Two of them got sober. So I was able to look at my family members and go, oh, wow, they have changed their life around and they've got this happiness and this wholeness and I want what they have. Mm. And also I was able to look at alcoholism as alcoholism, not just drinking, because what a lot of people do at 18, 19 years old is they think I'm not that bad. I could be worse. You know, I'm not on a heroin addict to the side of the street. You know, I had everything on the outside.
Yeah.
I was working in clubs. I was making good money. I was at university. I was doing all these amazing things.
So nobody would know.
I was the biggest perfectionist.
Yeah.
I was hiding it all.
Yeah.
And I was very good at hiding it because I was good at keeping secrets. But deep, deep down, underlying that, because the funny thing is because I was working in nightclubs.
Yeah, no one would notice, right?
But everyone thought I was living the life.
Yeah.
But really it was...
But I suppose also working in nightclubs, there's probably a certain level of like, to get through it. Like I only used to be a freaking host on the door and I'd be like, give me a wine. In order 100%. To deal with these drunk people, I need to be drunk.
100%. And also you don't... Everyone else is doing it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you don't think any different. But I always took it to the next level.
Mm.
Like, there were times where, you know, I would basically insinuate the alcohol. Guys, let's, you know, come to our pre-drinks, get paralytically drunk, not even make it to the club, and start throwing up. Like, all of my nights that I thought were going to be the best nights ever...
Can't remember them.
Don't remember.
Matt.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and people ask me this question all the time, like... Do you miss anything? Do you like miss drinking? I love drinking. There were many times I had amazing times. Like, you know, ecstasy and MDMA for me were just like the best in many areas in my life. Do you know what I mean? Like,
don't try this at home, kids.
Please don't try this at home, guys. But it never ended up good.
Mm.
So though that little high that I got that was amazing didn't last long.
Yeah, it's like the bad outweighed the good 100%. In the end. Yeah,
100%.
And the fact that you found this like certain level of contentment and fulfillment now by not doing all of that is so much more powerful than that. So talk to me then about seeing the sober people in your life and how that inspired you, because I find that so many people these days now are sober or sober curious.
Sober curious,
And but not even like, so I wouldn't say that I am sober curious in the way like I don't have any intention to stop drinking.
Right.
But I know that I spend a lot more time doing things that don't involve alcohol. So it's not like a case of it's either this or that. Mm-hmm. But it's like on the weekend, I like to get up and I like to feel fresh and go for a run on a Saturday morning and go for lunch with my friends rather than being in bed till midday because I've been out the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think has made the rise of people being sober or sober curious or just not drinking as much?
Yeah. So what you said right here is prime example of someone that I don't think has an issue with drugs and alcohol, right? So like... I get a lot of questions from people being like, you know, now that you're sober, like, do you just surround yourself around sober people? Like, what do you think about people drinking? And I'm like, okay, one, I'm 31 years old. I'm going to still have fun and go out. Like, even when I got sober, I was still going out clubbing. Thank God it didn't bother me. And two, I know the difference between it being a problem and then it being something you enjoy. There's nothing wrong with drinking. There's nothing wrong with getting on it. There's nothing wrong with doing drugs. It's just when it becomes a problem in your life. And some people will do it and it's a problem and other people will do it and it won't be a problem. So that's what it's all aware about. But with the sober curious thing, it's like, I do think because of the future generation, the generation above us, the wokeism of people becoming more consciously aware of what they're putting in their body, right? Veganism wasn't a thing in our day and age. You know, no one... even thought about it. People thought that you were weird if you're vegan.
Yeah.
Now it's cool.
Yeah.
Same with like, I know this is a bit like woo-woo, but like, you know, being your sexuality. Being your sexuality or being transgender, like people just becoming more open-minded. Yeah. So when I got sober at 18, people thought I was odd. Now people were like, okay, that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, like you said.
I think it's cool.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. But everyone's going against the grain.
Yeah.
Now because people are having more.
Yeah. No one's judging you for those things.
Exactly.
I went to a wedding on Sunday and I met this guy and he was having the best time on the dance floor, found out that he's been 2 years sober.
I love that.
And I was
I get it all the time.
What? I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, you're basically acting like me, and I was three bottles of wine deep. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it was like, it was amazing. And we were at my friend's wedding, who's also been sober for like just under 2 years now. She was having the best time.
Yeah.
And I think like when you get into the headspace of, obviously, that's like one end of the spectrum, but you know, you can still have fun.
100%.
And most of the time, people don't care as long as you're having fun.
100%. Like, most of my friends are literally baffled by me because I've always been that person that's able to be out till 5 a.m.
Yeah. No, like, I know, I remember. Lauren used to work at BXR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember there was one time you were like, oh, I was out till like 4 a.m. And I was like, wait, aren't you sober?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. I was at Savoia in Bali like the other month and I was at a friend's birthday and they were all fucked. Sorry.
It's fine.
They were all on tequila. And they were like, when they meet me for the first time, they're like, she'll be boring.
Yeah.
Then I'm out with them and they're like, you are absolutely nuts.
I don't think people meet you and think you're going to be boring.
No.
But if you go, oh, I'm sober, people go, oh, boring. Not all the time, though.
No, no. But yeah. But I think what's happened with, you know, the more sober I am, the more, you know, confident I am.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. You know, your confidence grows, your self-esteem grows, and, you know, you become more like in tune with what makes you feel good.
Mm.
There's times where I've been out and I've been like, this isn't for me. For me, it's all about the music, who I'm with, and if I'm tired and the vibe, if I'm on it. But actually, doesn't make a difference.
I think that's taken a lot of self-work.
Oh,
I can see it. And like the fact that you can go out and have that confidence, because I'm going to be honest, like at the wedding on Sunday, I didn't know anyone there. Mm. And like I knew of people, but that's why I had a wine, because I was like, at least it'll give me a bit more chat.
Yeah.
And then look at me, 12 o'clock on the dance floor, running the party. And I was having a great time.
But that's why people drink.
Yeah.
To get rid of that social anxiety.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with that. No one realised that I had that, but I struggled really. And like talking to men.
Yeah.
It was like, the minute I drink, it was like, I could talk to that guy.
Yeah, because I feel like, it just makes you just feel better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's amazing that you are now, like, an advocate for not having to do that.
100%.
And it's true, like, I go out a lot more now and don't drink. And I honestly do find I have less energy or less, but I have to, like, have a word with myself and be like, come on, like, you are still the same person. You probably just don't look as wavy.
100%. And it's all about in tune with, like we said, you know, subconsciously, especially in London and in big cities, it's a known thing to drink. It's unfortunately, we live in a binge drinking culture. That's all we do. We associate pubs with drinks. We associate 9 to 5 after going to whatever.
Yeah.
And I think when we change that narrative for ourselves, we actually realize that it doesn't make us any different or anything. It's just kind of just how it is. And I think once you make that decision to stop and just go on that path, actually you start to realise that there's so much more to life than just that, you know?
Is that this is my last question for you.
That's all right.
Is that kind of the advice you would give to your younger self?
100%. I get asked this question a lot, to be fair, but the main advice that I'd give to my younger self is like, never put too much pressure on yourself. I think a lot of my drinking and using was to do with the fact that I was so scared to not be liked and so scared to not be accepted for who I was as a person. Like, the reason why I started drinking was just generally because I wanted to be cool and I wanted to be liked and I wanted to fit in. And actually, as I get older, the more true I come to myself and the more authentic I come to myself, the more happy I am as a person. So that's what I would tell the younger me.
I love that. You are amazing. And I think you are amazing. Like, actually, you would have been back in the day, but now that I feel like you are so content within yourself and the fact that you can bring this wisdom to people is amazing. And you're doing great work. So thank you for that. And it's amazing to see you all the way from Bali, ladies and gentlemen. Laura White, thank you so much. Okay, so we're now going to move on to some listener questions. I liked these questions this week, actually. So, by the way, if you want to send any questions in to me, every week at the end of our show, we do some questions where I give you my expertise. So I've been asking other people their expertise, and now it's my opportunity. Okay, so first one was, where is it? Keely asks, how do I know when I can safely increase weight or when I should make the leap to a heavier weight? Okay, so this all comes down to progressive overload, which I feel like I've spoken about so much on this show. But it basically comes down to how you feel during your sets. So if you are say if you're doing bicep curls, right, and you are programmed 3 sets of 8 to 12 reps, and you're able to do 12 reps using your 6 kgs, that means that the weight is too easy for you. So then you should go up a weight. And then if you're trying to do, you aim for 12 reps again, but this time you're using 8 kgs and you might only squeeze out 10 reps. That means that you know, your rep volume has come down, but the weight has increased. It's basically about like monitoring how many reps you can do at ease. You always want to be working towards like the 70 to 80% like rep max volume. Obviously one rep max is a bit different. That's where you do like a deadlift of the max weight that you can only do for one. But when you're working with a hypertrophy rep volume, which is usually between 8 to 12 reps, if you're doing loads of sets at 12 reps, then it means that the weight's too much for you. So just try upping it a little bit and then see if your rep count comes down. So hopefully that helps you. Milo asks, how critical is it to track calories and macros? I love the word critical in there. That's a bit dramatic because it's not critical unless you are obviously working towards something. Like as we spoke to Bobby earlier, who works in like Olympic lifting and things, like she would be tracking calories and macros to the T because she would be competing and stuff. However, for someone like me, if I'm not working to a specific goal, i.e. if I'm not trying to lose weight or if I'm not trying to put on weight, then I usually work in just a maintenance calories. So for me, that is around like 2,000 calories. And I don't normally track, but I can kind of gauge from what I'm eating. But that's because I have the knowledge. But basically what I'm saying is unless you are trying to put on muscle mass, which is the main thing you want to focus on, is having between 1.8 to 2 grams of protein per kilo of body weight. That's the main thing you want to focus on. And then obviously getting your carbohydrates and things in there as well. So you want to be in a surplus of like your, there's so many calorie counter apps or things on the internet that you can use to basically find out what your maintenance calories would be. Then you want to add on like maybe like 500 calories and then make sure you're focusing on that protein macro. And that's what's going to give you your muscle gaining calorie amount. And it's the vice versa for losing weight. You want to knock off 500 calories but still be aiming for that protein. But other than that, guys, like I feel like it's such an individual purpose if you're going to be tracking calories or macros. Like I don't want people to be obsessing over it. It all just comes down to fueling your body with nutritious, delicious food and also training, so you are building the muscle mass for the food to fuel those gains. But always speak to a professional like myself if you fancied a little bit more, you know, in-depth information. Yeah, speak to a PT, speak to someone in the gym, and there's loads of a wealth of information online as well. But of course, there's also a lot of crap on there too. So, okay, and then moving on to Kobe, is static stretching ever necessary? Should I always do dynamic stretching instead, even after a workout? This also goes on from what I've just said about the internet being full of stuff. So dynamic stretching should be before a workout. And that's like, you know, say if you're going to do a run or leg workout, you do your, you know, your hip flexor warm-ups where you like swing your leg, you do your open the gate, close the gate, where you do those knees up and round, you know, you do some high knees, you'll do some world's greatest stretches, things like that. Then that's to prep your body to oil up those ligaments and those joints to get ready for the workout that you're about to do. And now on the internet, and there's new research that people say that you should only do dynamic stretching even after a workout. So that means like similar kind of, you know, whether the difference is that dynamic means moving and static means obviously still. So after a workout, rather than just holding a lunge or holding a quad stretch, you still do those kind of like still more fluid movements. However, I'm going to say old school for me. I used to do dancing, and before workout, we'd do the dynamic stuff. And then afterwards, we would sit in a stretch for between 30 to 40 seconds. And that's so you can actually feel it. So when you do like a hamstring stretch, you'll hold your leg, you're lying down, you're holding your leg towards you, and you can hold it there for after about 20 seconds, you'll feel it release and it'll go a little bit further. So I'm all for the static stretching, but only ever do it after a workout. And always just listen to your body, do what feels good for you. But always remember to stretch. I don't feel like it really makes a difference what you're doing afterwards, but as long as you're doing something. So yeah, hopefully that helps. That was a lot of information, a lot of word. Blah, blah, blah. But I hope you enjoyed today's show. It was another amazing one. I always feel like I come away from these sessions. It is like therapy, isn't it? I feel like we come away and we just have so much information. It's just amazing to meet all these inspirational, fantastic people. So make sure you do check us out, any previous shows that you might have missed. And I will see you here next week for What the Health at 11 a.m. FUBAR Radio. Lots of love, people. Goodbye.
FUBAR Radio presents
Access All Areas. We have the absolute icon, legend, Janice Dickinson.
I'm here.
Do you still enjoy doing reality shows, or do you now see it as more of like a part of your job that you like have to do?
I do really enjoy it. I don't enjoy the actuality of eating fish eyeballs.
Well, yeah, there's that side to Amazon.
Or goat's gonads, or vagina of cow.
Yeah. But you do like the sort of social side, do you? Like just the
social side was fantastic. Just getting to know people and sleeping with people and eating with people when we really have enough food.
Access All Areas.
Every Wednesday.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Where are you up to these days with your debt? You said it was at 37,000.
It was at 37. It's been a roller coaster. So I had £37,000 worth of debt, which I then paid back over about 5.5 months. I then continued to work for a few more months, and then I quit my job and went completely freelance. And I had a terrible, terrible year. And got back into debt. Fortunately, 2024 has been much kinder, and I'm earning a really good amount each month through my freelance work. But yeah, I'm back on the paying off a huge chunk of debt journey, which currently stands at about 44,000.
Every Monday.